He's incapable of making a free postulate. He, of course, cannot handle time. You'll find out that there's a direct index to the ability of an individual to handle, experience, and use time, and his ability to make a postulate. An individual can make a free postulate, which is not modified in any way. Then, he has no trouble with time. An individual has gotten down to a stimulus-response basis, whereby everything is handling him. He is not able any longer to make a free postulate. You'll find out the main barrier he's suffering from is time. Time, time, time. He'll talk all the time about time. He'll spend all of his time telling you that he doesn't have any time. At 1.5 on the tone scale, this is terrifically manifest. This is just routine. A person will sit still with folded arms, doing nothing, 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 nothing. And you say, why don't you do something? And they'll say, oh, I haven't got the time. Well, they're sitting there doing nothing, but I haven't got time. Another one, just a little bit higher than that on the tone scale, they haven't got time to start anything. You know, they haven't got time to do it, so they can't start it. Don't dare start it. Down low on the tone scale, they know it's always too late. And you get somebody at grief, and that is his common statement. Anything you ask him will be found in regard to time, it will be found to be too late. If a person were totally in grief, and you pointed to a clock, his first reaction on observing the clock would be, it's much too late. Too late for what? He wouldn't know. It's just too late. He also would have the rather interesting behavior of not going to dinner. Dinner is at 7, it's now 6:30, he would not go to dinner. Why? Because he can't go to dinner, because he doesn't have, it's too late. At 6 o'clock, even, a dinner at 7 would already have been eaten. This is sounds a little scrambled to you, but that's what's wrong. It's scrambled. The individual can't make a free postulate, and believe me, the rules and regulations of the physical universe are not adequate to provide enough for the thing to do. They are just not adequate. They are not even vaguely adequate. They inhibit motion to a tremendous degree. They force him into various types of agreements without any consent. And it's just gone on too long, and it's gotten too thick and heavy, you might say. Just too many things have entered into the game. So you could put, for your own purposes, in criticizing a society or something, you could put a little question mark after the game. Part of the best universe is a game consisting of barriers. You put a little question mark there. And to say it once was a game consisting of barriers. It's now an ardor consisting of barriers. Now, the whole universe, theoretically, being made out of agreements, could disappear on the breaking of the agreements. And this would be true if there was only one universe involved. But the mesh universe is protected by the fact that every Thetan in it is in at least a million universes. He's in lots of universes. He's not just in the physical universe. In the first place, he's in his own universe. He had his own universe before he collided with the physical universe. He made his own universe approximate the physical universe, and then his own universe became smaller and junior. And so there's two universes. His own universe approximated the physical universe and is now a map of the physical universe. Very small map, too. It shows every impact he ever had in the physical universe. You could call this a sort of an electronic gel, usually found to surround the individual. In the occluded case, it's totally black and pulled way in and subject to some of the darndest manifestations. But if that were just those two universes, that would be very simple, too. We could simply say poof, and the messed universe would disappear. Well, it isn't that simple in terms of universes. There's another universe. The Thetan is in his own universe, which has gotten into the physical universe, which is junior to, it's now his own universe, junior to the physical universe, and he is in a body which has a separate and independent universe, but he's interlocked with the body's universe. So he's got these two universes interlocked with the body's universe. Well, this wouldn't be too hard to take apart, but this body and he and this system of universes, they have been in collusion with and collision with an awful lot of universes on the track. This body has had other Thetans running it in earlier lives, a different This GE, you see, when he was a different body, had another Thetan running it. And this Thetan had a universe which influenced the physical universe and the body, too. So this body is a mass of interconnected, interlocked universes. All right, and the Thetan has been in connection with many bodies. So therefore, in the terms of lives, he, of course, has this all knotted up. Well, that means that he's been in connection with a lot of bodies, which bodies were in this kind of a state. So his universe has been influenced by each universe of a body he's been connected with. Everybody he's been connected with had its own universe, and he's still packing some sort of an imprint of all these universes. Now, let's just get into the current lifetime. And we find out that the body, if it's convinced of anything, is liable to be convinced the fact that it's in Mama's universe. Actually, it existed in Mama's body. It was regulated and changed around by Mama. And Mama certainly had a lot to do with the formation of this body. So, of course, then we have Mama's universe. Physically, the body was inside Mama. So, therefore, this fact that it's inside Mama's universe is too easy to assume. So we get the body being totally dependent upon Mama. Mama is changing it around in space all the time, and the body is certainly at least slightly living in Mama's universe. So therefore, our preclear would have the most perfect state you'd find him in. You'd find this boy just in fabulous condition. This would be the interlock of universes. One, he'd be in his own universe, which was in the physical universe, which had gotten smaller than the physical universe, which was intermingled with his body's universe, which was crossed over in Mama's universe. That's the least pattern that you would discover. Now you're trying to bail this boy out, which is to say you're trying to get him up to a point where he can make freedom of postulates. Well, there's a law governing universes that seems to be a basic agreement. And that is, and this law, by the way, you wouldn't like to do without. If you're in your own universe, then your postulate should stick in your universe, shouldn't it? I mean, when you make a postulate in your universe, that would be the postulate that goes. Now, let's suppose there's somebody else in your universe visiting or something, and his name is Henry, and he makes a postulate. And his postulate wouldn't go, would it? It'd have to be your postulate that went in your universe. Is that right? Otherwise, it wouldn't be your universe. So by definition, if you're going to have a universe of your own, your postulate will have to go in it. Or we're going to see you in anybody else. So any universe is subject chiefly to the postulates of the God of that universe. And this is practically a law. Any universe is subject chiefly to the postulates of the God of that universe. Well, we get this in the physical universe. How easy. Everybody says, well, there's a God, and this God has made certain postulates, and we're subject to his postulates. We live by them every day, by the way. Every time that we engage in any activity, we're engaging in some morality, which is ostensibly laid down by the God of the physical universe. Well, if you're in Mama's universe, you're subject to the God of that universe's postulates, and that's Mama's postulates. In other words, that universe that you're in is subject to Mama's postulates. Now, you're going to unmake all the postulates that are in a preclear's bank? Think of that for a moment. He's in another universe. And if we could just say, all we have to do now is change our postulates and all be clear. You see, it'd be the simplest thing in the world. Unless this other law existed. If this other law existed, why, we wouldn't be able to do that, and we can't do that. We know by experience that we can't say to a preclear, all right, just make up your mind to be clear. All right, now you're clear. Next. So what is the bug that stands in the line? Postulates are the most senior thing there are. No set of agreements are senior to postulates. Individual postulates are always senior to any pattern of agreements. Any mechanical pattern is always junior, so therefore we say all you'd have to do is just get somebody to change his mind and he'd be all right. And you get in there and you slug and you run this and you run that, trying to get somebody to change his mind, change his mind, change his mind. The poor guy can't change his mind because he's living under the reign and of postulates of the other God. In other words, if he's in somebody's universe, he understands this. He's agreed to this. This, too, is an agreement, you see. He's agreed that the God of the universe is the one who makes the postulates for that universe, and he's living, let us say, in Mama's universe, or Papa's universe, or his wife's universe, or his even this, his dog's universe. And that those universes are subject to the postulates of the gods of those universes. And you're not trying to change the preclear's postulates. You're trying to change the postulate of the dog who departed this life 40 years ago. You're trying to change the postulates of Mama, who actually isn't even vaguely sitting in that auditing chair. She's clear over by Keokuk someplace. Maybe dead and gone. Who knows? More serious than that, you're trying to change the postulates of gods of universes who have long since evaporated into dust, and the preclear doesn't even remember who they are. And this interlock of postulates itself is how postulates get so thoroughly agreed upon. Nobody can pick his postulate out of the mess. Not being able to, of course, he becomes junior to any agreed upon postulate. Somebody, if he's in terribly bad shape, somebody can come along and say, well, the city council has just agreed that all men have to shave their heads. He could be in bad shape if he believed this. He'd have to go home and shave his head. All right. Then it becomes a problem of taking universes apart in order to take postulates apart. Me, two theoretical channels. If an individual owned everything, here's where ownership cuts in, you see. If an individual owned everything, why, it'd be the simplest thing in the world. He'd just suddenly say, well, I own everything, and therefore they're all my postulates, I'm clear. There's that theoretical channel. Processes which lead him up toward the conviction of ownership of all, and which desensitize his feelings about it's his, it's mine, and so forth. Well, that course is open. And the other course, there's two other courses. Another course that is open on the thing, of course, is again, just sorting out postulates until he becomes no longer afraid of them or resisting them or mixed up with them in such a way that he can make an independent postulate. You know, just drills, but which would lead him eventually to making independent postulates. You can do these. It's a long course, but it'll work. You can just drill him into making independent postulates and postulating things on and on and on and on and on until he will discover that he can be cause, regardless of where he is or what he is. At that moment, he escapes into some freedom. All right. The last one would be taking the universes apart. Now, this is not a fast process, but it's an intensely workable process. Let's just take these universes apart. Well, we're going to take something apart. What's holding them together? Well, you say agreements. And agreements were originally born out of postulates. All right. Fine. Is there anything mechanical about it that's agreed upon? Yes. Let's take two globes, identically the same size. That is, two spheres that contain space and so forth. And let's take these two spheres, and let's call one of them A and one of them B. So we'll take sphere A and set it up on a table, and sphere B and set it up alongside of it. And we'll find out that these two globes do not influence each other until struck together. They each are based upon the postulate that something exists, that something being space. Then there must be an additional postulate that the somethingnesses have collided. So we have A and B not influencing each other until they're banged together. Now, the point where they are banged together is liable to bear a scar. And where B hit A, we have a point which is an impression from A. And when A hit B, we have a point on A, which tells us that B's been there. Right? All right. Let's smash them together in such a way that they coincide with each other. And let's hit them lots of times. Do you know this is a fact? You could take a hammer and beat those two globes so thoroughly that you would not any longer be able to distinguish which was A and which was B. And this is done by impacts. And if you're going to go into the mechanics of universes at all, it had better be either on the basis of where they can't be destroyed or the basis of where they can be. And you're dealing, in any case, with the mechanism which interlocks universes. Identical points in the two universes, when struck, bring about the illusion that those two points are the same point. So we have a certain point in universe A, which when struck in coincidence with universe B, those two points struck, that make it indistinguishable whether A or B were struck. Which was struck, A or B? They were both struck. Well, which is A and which is B? They become indistinguishable. There's two universes enmeshed. Well, this could be a very weighty subject, couldn't it? I'll tell you a little story. Dog. He got hit by a car. He passed that point many times afterwards. But the first day he passed that point where he'd been hit by a car, he went at least 100 yards out of his way to avoid the space. The car was no longer there, the person who was driving the car was no longer there, but that point in space was there. And that dog avoided the point in space and went straight up to the top of the hill where the car was that had hit him, still had some of his fur on the front bumper, and paid no attention to it. And the person who was driving the car and it hit him and had come out immediately afterwards spoke to the dog, and the dog paid no attention. Didn't worry him a bit. But thereafter, every time the dog passed that spot on the road, the dog avoided that spot. How would you possibly unoccupy a universe? It's easy to occupy one, but how would you unoccupy one without your consent? It would be by the process of avoiding every spot in it, wouldn't it? If you totally, against your will, unoccupied a universe, got out of one, it would be by the process of avoiding every single spot, one after the other, until there was no spot left in it, because all the spots in it had to be avoided. Do you see that? Now that is other determined disoccupancy of the universe. See that? What do you think happened when your universe was in collision with the physical universe? Let's say you could approximate your universe and the physical universe perfectly. Same size. And then there were blows. You ran this into that. Planets ran into this and that. You stumbled over rocks. Each time anything like this occurred, any time one of those impacts occurred, you had a spot there to be avoided. This is experience. This is knowing how to learn. This is learning you. You move off of spots. You know what to avoid. You get things that mustn't happen again, so forth. You gradually, if you had a billion, billion, billion of these spots, you know, the billionth power, you'd practically get the whole darn physical universe filled with spots which mustn't be occupied anymore. And your effort to move through the universe would be very impeded. And you would pull your universe down to a very small size so as to protect it, but you couldn't touch it either, could you? Because it was all full of spots that mustn't be touched again. Sad and dreary picture, isn't it? Horrible picture, as a matter of fact. It would bring about the almost total withdrawal of you from the physical universe while still remaining in it and with no place to go. And when you get a case that's bad off, you ask him to get out of his head or do something, and now flinch. He's liable to look at you very puzzledly and say, "But I haven't got any place to flinch to." Now, when that occurs, why, you simply have a fellow who has just run out of spots to go to that are safe. Safe spots don't exist anymore. The unalterable points in the universes are not the objects in the universes, but the spots where something happened. And if you go on the basis of just one space, which it isn't, but if you go on the basis of just one space, then you have an unalterable arbitrary. You have spots you must avoid. Now, let's see if this holds true in life. Yes, it does. You find out that an individual who's had bad luck in a town tends not to go back to that town. An individual who has had an accident is liable not to go back to the scene of the accident, or is liable obsessively to go back to the scene of the accident. There we get the other factor. When you get two objects colliding, if you've gotten to this point, you see you're in agreement with Newton's three laws of motion. For every action, there's an equal and contrary reaction. So that a fellow gets so that he wants because he's been hit by it. He wants it because he's been hit by it. Theoretically, you could punish a body into a tremendous amount of desire. You could make a body, by pounding a body with a club, you could make the body crave the club. By taking a slave and beating him with chains for a long time, you could give him an insatiable craving for chains. As long as you beat him just the right length of time so that you weren't going over the point of where he was kicking back. You see, he's rejecting the chain, and then he wants the chain, and then he rejects it, and then he wants it. Doesn't want it, then he does want it. He does want it, doesn't. Why? It's just a matter of collisions, that's all. So a fellow could have the terrible feeling that he wanted all of this space, you see, and he wanted to be on these spots. Well, this would stick him. It would stick him all over these spots. I want these spots. He wants them because they've hit him. No other sensibility to it than that. And yet, sensibly, he knows that because he's been hit there, he better not be on these spots, so he doesn't want anything to do with them. So he's trying to get rid of them and trying to have them at the same time. In other words, he gets confused. Totally a matter of consideration whether your universe is bigger than the mesh universe or the mesh universe is bigger than your universe. It's just whether you consider it is or not. You can run a little drill on Preekler. So get the idea now of your universe being much bigger than the physical universe, the physical universe inside your universe. Okay, he says. Now get it so that your universe is much smaller and the physical universe is much bigger. Oh, yeah, he can get this. Just consideration. Back and forth. Well, the uniform consideration is that the physical universe is very big and very powerful and is very dangerous. And people walk around and bump into rocks and bump their shins on stair steps and fall out of trees and hit the ground and drive cars and hit walls and fall out of airplanes and get blown up in spaceships and get shot and shoot people, and it's impact. Well, what is sickness? Sickness is the exhaustion of no longer wanting anything to do with the force. It's the wave of I don't want anything to do with the force. If you ask an individual to lay aside all the force he had, he, of course, would have his whole engram bank, his whole universe collapse on him. Couldn't do otherwise than collapse because it's only force that holds it there. Is force itself derives from the ability to hold two fixed points in space. Force derives from the ability to hold two fixed points. Hold them apart, keep them separated, impose distance on them. The ability to have space is the ability to impose dimension. Space is the viewpoint of dimension. This is done by posture. As long as you can say, that is 8,000 miles from me, and it is, conceptually, you can impose space, but when you get somebody who says, this mock-up is now going to be 8,000 miles from me, it's now 8,000 miles from me, and bang, it hits him in the face, he is no longer able to impose points. So force is a junior thing to the ability to impose distance. If you can impose distance, you can certainly impose force. Well, an individual gets hit on lots of spots, so he doesn't want anything to do with spots, so he doesn't have any force anymore. He didn't want to have anything to do with these distances anymore. Distance is something that is horrible to him. Distance is a barrier he can't surmount. Impacts are awaiting him everywhere. If impacts are awaiting him everywhere, he doesn't want to have anything to do with anywhere. Well, if he doesn't want to have anything to do with anywhere, the whole bank will collapse in on him. And whether or not you call it moral courage or bravery or physical courage or strength or the ability to develop volts and electrons or what you call it, it doesn't matter what you call it. It all boils down to a couple of points in space. And if you've got these two points in space and you can keep them apart, why, that's good. If you can keep them apart, pull them together at will, that's good. If they're staying apart or going together on another determinism, that's not good. That means you've got no force. See that? So it boils down, in essence, to a problem of agreements. But what are these agreements? They are the agreements which have wound up in a complexity of universes, which are all interlocked by having incidents in common. They have points of collision in common. Your universe has points of collision in common with the physical universe, so that you hardly recognize it as your universe at all anymore. It's sort of a map of the physical universe. A map of collisions. Impacts. Your body is disturbed continually by re-stimulated impacts. Its thinkingness, if it thinks at all, is monitored by the memory of having been hit by a certain action. A man is as well off as his goals and dreams are intact. If a man can dream, if a man can have goals, he can be happy and he can be alive. If he has no goals, he doesn't even have a future. A person believes, when running into a game called Messed Universe, consisting of barriers, when he believes that all of his own actions are dependent upon the Messed Universe, he thinks that any action he takes is going to be barriered. He thinks he's going to be stopped in everything he does. If he would say, well, I think I'm going to be a painter, if he just thought that, he would probably get the idea of some kind of a wall sitting right straight in front of his face. It's a direction. To be a painter is a direction to go. He so thoroughly agreed with the universe that he believes that to gain any objective, he has to cross a distance. If he can't cross that distance, he can't have these objectives. So he gets the idea that he can't be anything. He can't arrive. Why? He can't arrive because anything he thinks of doing in life is going to be stopped. Barriers are going to be erected across his path. He thinks, I'm going to be a painter. Immediately after that, his stimulus response mechanism says instantly, well, you know you couldn't be a painter. Your mother always said, you know, instantly. He knows he can't be the best driver in the world. He just knows this. He knows this and he knows that. What's he know? Well, that's another kind of knowingness. It's the knowingness by impact. Certainty by impact, as opposed to certainty by self-confidence. Now, you're trying to take an individual away from certainty by impact and certainty that he's going to be hurt. That points in space are going to impede his way. That he is in a game that is all barriers, barriers, barriers. You're trying to take him away from that kind of an idea. Separate him out and bring him over here to a point where he can make a postulate and make the postulate stick. You do that by separating him out of universes, making him make his own postulates good, and making him capable of determining an action and then bringing the action off. And any therapy there is involved with the problem of getting a person away from being one of these, well, practically an automaton being run by Newton's three laws of motion and this entanglement of universes, getting him away from being subject to the gods of all the universes he has inhabited, such as mamas, papas, the physical universe, doesn't matter, and getting him to a point of where he can get over here and make up his own mind. That's all. All he has to do is make up his own mind. The wrong way to do it is simply say to him, all you have to do is make up your own mind. The right way to do it is to disentangle him and give him a lot of wins, and he'll win in the end.